Sunshine Meets on Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine 106.8.
A very good evening. You're welcome along to Sunshine Meets. You're listening to Sunshine 106.8. Andrea Hayes with you on this Sunday night. Now, my guest tonight is the executive pastry chef at the five-star Merrion Hotel. He has a passion for picture-perfect pastry, as we all saw in the bake-off tent. He has over 20 years, probably a little bit more maybe, expertise in the kitchen, I'm sure. I don't want to add any extra years onto him, but we know him as one of the judges from the Great Irish Bake Off on our televisions. It is, of course, the wonderful Paul Kelly. It's lovely to have you here, Paul.
Andrea, thank you very much for having me. Great to see you.
It's great to see you as well, and your picture-perfect pastries. I was salivating last night.
Oh my God.
As I was looking at them, but we're going to talk about that a little bit later on. But as we do, we're going to go back to the start and bring you back to where you were born. Can you tell us a little bit about where you grew up and your family and the things that influenced you as a young Paul Kelly?
Okay, right to the very beginning, eh? So I suppose going back to Wexford, where I was reared, in Wexford town actually, my three sisters, myself, my father and mother lived in a house just outside the centre of town. I did all my schooling there, had a lot of great years in Wexford, and I love going back. I go back as much as I can now, and that's really it.
So talking about your mum and dad there, Bernie and Phil, and you were surrounded by girls, blessed among girls. You were the only boy. Was there a high expectation for you as the only boy, or were you doted on?
I wouldn't say, I suppose my sisters say I was doted on and it was the favourite, but I don't think I was. I mean, my mother and father were massive influence to me in my life. My father was a self-employed truck driver. He worked extremely hard. He's still alive today. He's 86, still very self-sufficient and is very, very active. And it's, I think, that's a lot to do, the way he lived his life, I think. I wouldn't have seen my father from one day to the next, maybe. Sometimes he'd leave at 6 o'clock in the morning. I'd see him for breakfast. We'd have porridge together and he'd give us a kiss goodbye, and I wouldn't see him till that night at 12 o'clock maybe. And funnily enough, when I think back, I couldn't really rest or sleep as a child until I heard the truck coming down the street, and then I'd hear him parking up, everything turned off, and then I would just rest and fall asleep. Amazing when I think back.
Very hard work, and it probably gave you that hard work ethic that you're very much known for, but you were just used to seeing that at home.
Yeah, I think I was growing up in an environment like that, and again, my father was hard working, my mother was as well. She reared us. She was a grafter, a very, very proud woman, an amazing cook, and she just loved her house, she loved her kids, she loved her husband, and I suppose a typical mammy.
Very happy home.
Happy home, yeah. Now, she was tough. She had, you talk about expectations there, I think, well, I suppose 3 out of 4 isn't bad. My sisters were like, oh my God, it was like sunshine shining through the door, and then my results had come through, and I was like, oh my God, all hell had break loose, but I survived. I think at some point she accepted that I wasn't going to be a genius when it came to academics. I think she finally got that after about 18 years, but it was probably very tough for her.
And in terms of your mum, I know she was very much central to you choosing the career that you've chosen. You might tell us a little bit about that particular time in school, because she kind of acknowledged that maybe you didn't want to go down a certain path, and she kind of led you in the right direction.
Yeah, and I think, and when you mentioned that, it's not about her cooking. I must admit, like, her cooking was amazing and I loved it. I mean, the fact that she couldn't figure out how to use Bisto or make custard properly, bird custard, without leaving lumps. You know, you get over these things as a kid, just eat around the black spots and the white spots. But I think, when I left school in around 87, I was unemployed, like most of, I suppose, most of Wexford, most of the country maybe. And it was a tough time. It was tough because my father was working even harder. My mother was doing part-time jobs to kind of just put food and on the table for us, and I had no job. So I think my first job was basically just collecting bottles in a nightclub in Wexford, in White's Hotel actually, and that was every weekend. And then secondly, I got the chance to work again part time in the Mayflower Inn in Wexford town, which was a pub not too far from the centre as well. But behind the scenes, I guess my mother had a better idea of what I was going to be doing in my life, and she applied and put my name forward for a course run by CERT through the government, which took people like myself off the dole at the time, and trained us in hospitality. And it was a double, very good double for me, because it meant that The course was in Ballyshannon, which where my mother was from, and that was my second home, and I loved it dearly up there, and I have great memories up there. But that meant me moving from Wexford to spend 3 months of the winter months in Bundoran, just outside Ballyshannon, to train as a chef.
And were you surprised when your mum came back and said, "Now, Paul, we're sending you off to college"? Was there a bit of kind of like, was there a strong conversation in the house, or were you saying, "Well, mum, thanks a million"?
Strong conversation. Well, I remember seeing the piece of paper where the where it was advertised. It might have been in one of the local the People newspaper or something. And I remember then just hearing that you're going on an extended holiday. And so, because we used to go up twice a year, and she said, and I said, "Oh, this is great, but you're going to be studying, and you're going to be training as a chef." And I was just thinking, oh my god, this is because I was excited, because I just love Ballyshannon and I love Donegal, but I was kind of very nervous as well, because it was a new environment. I think I'd heard that there was going to be another 140 students in this in the hotel. So what CERT did was they take over the Great Northern Hotel in the winter, and they trained 150 of us to, you know, either become a receptionist, a waiter, chef, you know, whatever it was, a duty manager. And then in the summer months then, they put you out into the industry and gave you a job. So great, brilliant training when I think back.
Absolutely. It sounds like the perfect thing to do after school. 160 of, you know, students similar age, I'd imagine.
Yeah. And the thing was, you were living in the hotel as well.
I'd say the antics.
Well,
now,
you see, yeah, you think that. But when I think back, because a few years later, I ended up actually teaching the same program, which is a great circle of life for me. But when you were in that environment, it was strict. It was really so. You would literally have to arrive on a Sunday night. You'd be in bed by 10, lights out at 11 o'clock. And I mean lights out at 11 o'clock.
Up and there was no phones or anything there, of course, to distract you, or TV, you know, it really was.
It was just good old honest conversation and messing. It was brilliant. I love it.
And then the lights went out, but you slept, but you're up quite early.
Yeah, I mean, okay, you were supposed to be up by 7, breakfast room by 7:30, you'd be finished by 8, and in class by 8:30 or 8:45. But like, you know, when you start forming friends and groups, and I was always, because school for me in the Christian Brothers was never about maths or academics like that. It was always about the sports. Mm. I have to admit, I loved art and I loved technical drawing, but other than that, it was just sports. So when I went into the environment in the Great Northern training, it was like you'd hook up with people who are in similar kind of activities, and we'd get up at like 5:30, 6 o'clock. We'd run around Bundoran maybe 5 times or whatever it was, the challenge was, come back, have a shower, and then we'd join the rest of the crew for the morning duties.
Wow, setting you up perfectly for a life in the kitchen.
When I think back, it was a great life.
And then after that, where did you go from Ballyshannon?
Right, so Ballyshannon then, or Bundoran, basically moved down to Rosnaula. So Connor Britton, who was a massive help and mentor for me, owned a hotel called the Sandhouse Hotel in Rosnaula. And he took me on for the summer. And it was there you were kind of starting, all right, this could be good. I'm enjoying myself. I'm having fun. I'm enjoying the creativity, the artistic side. And, you know, it's not about, you know, being able to add and subtract and all that stuff at this point anyway. So then from there, I kind of said at the end of the summer, the hotel closes down. And then Connor said, you know, you're going to have to do your training, proper training. So I said, okay, what does that mean? He says, you're going to have to move to Killarney and do a 2-year full-time program down there. And I was kind of going, oh my God, exciting, but nervous. So I went down there and I worked in the Great North, or sorry, I'm getting mixed up. I worked in the Europe Hotel in Killarney for a season, came back and finished my final year in college. And then I was selected, luckily, to go to America on a scholarship. 5 of us from Ireland were selected to go to Johnson & Wales University in Providence, Rhode Island.
Wow.
Amazing.
How did that happen?
Well, I'll tell you briefly how it happens. You put your name forward, you write an essay of over 500 words of why you should go. You do, I think, 3 interviews and then they'll pick you.
I mean, there's an element of luck, but you always must have had that star quality. Clearly, from a very early age, you showed a lot of potential, passion, and all of the elements and ingredients required to rise to the top as you did.
Yeah, I think, you know, did I really plan it? Not at all. Do I consider myself lucky? Absolutely. Very lucky and very fortunate. And maybe I give off this kind of, you know, aura that I was like really able to do this. But I don't think it wasn't planned by any means. I enjoyed working hard. I enjoyed just being honest in my work and just giving it 100%. And maybe that's what got me to where I am today.
And what was it like then working in a Michelin star restaurant as a trainee?
Well, in the Park Hotel in Kenmare, we actually, the team that was there, we actually achieved the Michelin star together, which was brilliant, under the very careful guidance of Brian Clear and Francis Brennan, who is an amazing a man. He owned the Park Hotel and still owns the Park Hotel. A man whose door was always open, and which was a massive help for us, you know, because if we had any questions or anything like that, we could ask a man who knew almost everything. So we actually got the star down there together, which was a brilliant achievement. I remember I was away at the time, and I can tell you about the stages and stuff later on, but we were in a Dutch restaurant working crazy hours, and we got this phone call through saying, listen, you've just got a Michelin star. Amazing. Champagne was out. It was just, in our field, in our industry, that's quite an achievement.
And just to explain the achievement that it is and how hard it is to get one Michelin star.
Right, so a Michelin star is basically, they say it's based on the food initially. The second one then is, I think they'll say that it's basically food and service together and ambience and stuff like that. So the food has to be spot on, but not just on one day or a Monday and a Friday. It has to be spot on consistently and high quality, good ingredients, high quality food, and a good, you know, a kind of a connection with seasonality and stuff like that. And what happens is then the inspectors just spontaneously turn up at your door. You never know when they're going to come, how many times they're going to come, and then they're all always be different people. The one sign, I suppose, is that it's an individual sometimes, never a couple, so you might spot it. And then they go off and they, I suppose, they sit around the table and they say, listen, you had a great meal, I love this, I love the dessert, I love this. And then it's time to decide whether you get the star or not. But it's hard work.
And in terms of actually achieving it, was it always on the radar down there in the hotel? Was that something that you were aspiring, those standards always had to be that high for that reason?
Well, I'm not sure, working with Brian and Francis Brennan, I'm not sure that was the ultimate goal, but definitely when I think back, the standards and the quality of food, I'm sure in the back of their mind, I think it probably would have been a mistake if they had kind of just went out in that particular season saying, listen, we want the star. It's not fair on them, it's not fair on the team. So we just go, we just do what we do, and we do it as best as we can, and then luckily we got it.
You got the star. I'm sure the call back to Mammy was a real proud moment. Do you remember telling her?
I don't remember telling her, but I can tell you this much, she wouldn't have really cared.
No,
I mean, Michelin star and mammies and daddies, no.
No, they just,
when are you coming home is the thing.
I know, and have the cooked dinner and the custards ready for you and everything.
Oh,
a bit of pesto.
Yeah, well, the custard was my mother's favourite, yeah, but you could just never get that cornflour cooked out properly.
Oh, good luck. Tough praise. Now, we're going to actually play your first song. Paul Kelly, the executive pastry chef at the 5-star Merrion Hotel, and of course we know him from the Great Irish Bake Off. Your first song is Dolly Parton Number. Tell us why you've chosen it.
So I chose the Dolly Parton because it reminds me of my mother, actually. We'd be all lying in bed at night time and you'd hear this howling, and I can only describe it as like a howling from the sitting room. And then you'd go down and you'd look, you'd peep in through the door, and you'd see my mother there with her red headphones on, and she's just letting it rip with the singing. A terrible voice, but she wasn't hearing what we were hearing, but she just loved Dolly Parton, and used to bring a tear to her eye.
Sunshine Meets on Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine 106.8.
You're very welcome back. I hope you're enjoying your Sunday night. You're listening to Sunshine 106.8. It is Andrea Hayes with you. I was going to say it is, nearly forget my own name there. It's Sunshine Meets, and tonight, so I'm under pressure because he's used to high standards in the kitchen. It is, of course, the executive pastry chef from the Merrion Hotel, and he was on the Great Irish Bake Off, and just the sight of him even in the studio is making me tense. It is Paul Kelly. Paul, we're going to talk about kind of the Merrion Hotel.
Okay.
I mean, I just couldn't be the history and heritage of the hotel, but you've kind of been part of it from the very start. Tell us a little bit about how you got into the hotel and just the journey you've been on. It's just an incredible story.
Yeah, I have to sometimes sit down and write it down, what's been achieved. But originally, I was teaching at the time, 1997, actually, and an opportunity came up to join the Merrion. And I remember walking into the kitchen and having a look, and just the size of the kitchen was like, for me at the time, was just, and the cleanliness of it, or the cleanliness of it, was just unbelievable. But the one thing that stuck with me was, these guys have showers for staff. I couldn't believe it. Because, you know, you've worked in so many places. I'm not saying the place I've worked in hadn't got showers, but it was just oh my God, this is great. And you get your own uniform, and your uniform is nice and clean and everything, and the chef was showing me around. And who could have told you then, like 21 years later, I was still working with the same chef.
It's incredible.
It's massive.
And just kind of for anybody that doesn't know the five-star Merrion Hotel, just kind of give us a little kind of insight into what it's like, because even the art, everything in it is just so special and up to that five-star standard.
Yeah, it's an amazing place to work. And I'm just honoured and so happy to be in a part of it. Like I look at it sometimes, like myself and the Merrion, we've kind of evolved and we've been through a lot together and we've come out the end. And again, the hotel is very busy, such high standards. But it just comes from, you know, our GM, Mr. Peter McCann, sets a high standard for everybody. My own chef, Ed Cooney, sets a high standard for the kitchen. And we all just fall into place. And it's easy because it's just everybody does the same.
Then the restaurant that you're famous for and then the afternoon tea, there's so many things. I mean, I always have that memory of whenever you eat there, the cloches coming out off at the time. You know, there's an element of just, I mean, it's luxury when you go up there, really.
It's very posh, isn't it?
It's very posh. And I must say, for a girl from the north side, I can be out of my comfort zone occasionally. But the food and the attention to detail, but the service, everything from the minute you walk in, from the actual welcome of the people on the door, they might remember your name or they might, you know, there's those little tip, you know, things. So just explain about the hotel if they don't know the restaurant or the afternoon tea or the kind of standards that are maintained.
Absolutely. And the Merrion Hotel, it's a fine building from the outside. It's kind of unassuming. You wouldn't think it was a hotel until you walk inside. But that's when it really hits you how beautiful the people are, the staff as well. They're so friendly, like you say. And they will make a point to make your stay in the Merrion, you know, the best that it can be, you know, whether to remember your name or to remember your likes or dislikes, you know, it's all there for you. I suppose working there then, I guess it's been, there's nearly 250 staff there now at the moment, all working to kind of make the best product they can. Just lost my chain of thought there.
I was to go in for afternoon tea, which you're sort of famous for, and like it's a three course. Is it still three courses?
Well, the afternoon tea, it's called the Art Afternoon Tea.
Yes.
So basically that was a project set up a number of years ago, and I was involved heavily in the beginning along with the team, and we just basically thought, you know, we got such a great art collection. I think it's the largest privately owned art collection in Europe on our walls in the Merrion. So why not make that, you know, as part of our afternoon tea and just call it the Art Afternoon Tea? So then the project was put on my table, and then I had to come up with some dishes and food and stuff like that. And actually, do you know what? Thinking back, it was quite, it made sense for me to be doing that because I loved art in school.
Mm.
And I loved pastry and I loved working as a pastry chef. So bringing the both of them together just made a lot of sense. So when I look at a painting, it's not about being exactly the way the painting is in the food. It's just about different colours that'll inspire flavours.
And your interpretation, of course.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's very subjective. I mean, what I might see, you won't. But I tried to get the flavours right and make them kind of, you know, seasonal and stuff like that. And then the colours and shapes come in there somewhere as well. But it'll never be an exact. And that's the mistake I made at the very beginning, all those years ago. I was trying to be too exact. So I bought this printer, and it was a computerized printer where you put the painting in printed it on edible paper, and then I wrapped it around this bavoir or mousse or tart, and it looked, now in fairness, it looked good, but compared to what we have today, it made no sense. It was just too clinical for the Merrion. And you know, we need to, so then I decided, okay, I need to go away and learn myself. So I went to London, I went to Paris, I visited a very good friend of mine in London who does the fashion afternoon tea. Morat is his name.
Mm.
And I worked with him, but I wasn't working with him to get any recipes or anything like that. I was just working with him to get inside his head. So what he used to do was go to fashion shows and watch them parading up and down, and then gets inspiration from there. And then he create food items to reflect handbags or hats or and stuff like that. So I came back refreshed out of London and Paris, and I said to myself, right, scrap this whole kind of exact movement that I'm on, and we're just going to make the yellow is going to be lemon, the green is going to be pistachio, the brown is going to be hazelnut, praline, and then we get a couple of shapes just to make it a little bit more sense of it. And that's what we have today, and it's evolving the whole time.
And it's never, I suppose, for people, the experience of going in for afternoon tea, you made it trendy before it was even trendy, because it's very popular now. But this was quite a few years ago when you came up with that marriage of the art and the afternoon tea and that whole experience.
Yeah, and it was tough because people came in for, whether it was art afternoon tea, they came in for afternoon tea thinking they were going to get the generic obbligato fruit tart and a slice of some sort of a mousse. And at the beginning people were going, oh yeah, maybe. But we stuck by our guns. I think the vision was clear what we wanted to achieve in the Merrion Hotel. And now it's been great. We're busy and busy every week, every
weekend.
You
can barely get a booking.
Well, yeah.
You're lucky if you can get booked in to see Paul's art afternoon tea. It's actually a must. It's one of those things that particularly even tourists coming here, they're told about it and they book it when they're booking the flights sort of thing.
Yeah, and you can actually go around, you get a tour as well with your little headphones and you can hear all about the art. And then you can take a catalogue, an art catalogue with you. And you can have the catalogue with you while you're eating as well. But it's a beautiful, it's almost like a ceremony because when it's put in front of you, it's explained in detail by the guys on the floor. They know so much about it because they've listened to what we've been, our journey as well, and they can tell you exactly what the reasoning, the colours and the flavours and everything is. Brilliant.
No, it is. It's a great experience for somebody to have. I wanted to bring you back to going into different restaurants and working and getting inspiration because that was something that I noticed was kind of peppered all throughout your career and still continues. And one of the restaurants I noticed, you worked in the 7-star Burj, and now you're working in a 5-star. I mean, there's no 8-star, so you really wanted to go all the way to the top. Now, I've been inside the Burj, but what's it like being inside the kitchen in the Burj?
Oh, sure, it's amazing. But the chain of thought behind the travel was basically, it started in the Park Hotel in Kenmare. Bruno was a real pusher of, you know, when you've time off, you make that time work and you learn, especially in the early days of your career. So what we used to do in our break during the winter months in Kenmare is we just pick, but only the best. So it had to be a 3-star, a 2-star. We'd go for a 1-star, but not always, or restaurants. And then you'd have to pick the best hotels in the world. And then the hard work begins where you're making these phone calls, you're trying to make a connection with someone in the kitchen. And then if you got into the kitchen, that's called doing a stage.
A stage. So you'd be there for a couple of days, is it?
Weeks, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, a couple of days, you would only be getting to kind of familiar with the layout of the kitchen. Weeks, you're starting to make your contact with the people who'll give you the recipes, basically. That's where you wanted to be.
And are you allowed to do the stage? Obviously, you were supported, but is that something that's common? Have you got a call from somebody stateside or maybe anywhere in Europe saying, I want to come into your kitchen and look at how you do the afternoon tea?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit more complicated now. Like years ago, you could walk up to the back door and knock on and say, listen, is there any chance I could do a week? And you would be accepted. But I suppose security now is a little bit different. But people are contacting me quite a bit. They want to come in and, you know, just work and just trying to build up their skills, build up their knowledge. And it's fine. We just go through the procedure, through HR and stuff like that. But years ago, we would go and we'd spend like, you could spend 3 months. Now, remember, you're there and you're not getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
Accommodation was a plus. Getting fed was a plus as well. You would just be running around the kitchen. Some days, Mondays, Tuesdays, most restaurants would close in Europe and you'd be on your own. So you'd have to save a lot of money to do that.
Wow.
And it was tough. Like, I'm not saying it was. I loved it, and I think it's for every chef. Even now, I think it's the proper thing to do for building your knowledge. But way back then, you know, you were going over there on a very tight budget, and there was times where you'd be collecting your Coke bottles and literally going to the supermarket to get a few bob at the weekends.
And is there some particular chefs that kind of stand out? I mean, you probably worked or been around some of the biggest names in the culinary world.
Yeah.
Is there any that really impressed you?
Wow, everybody,
you've met everybody,
yeah,
haven't you?
I have, and I'm not trying to sound romantic about it, but every day you're impressed by somebody, but if I think back, one of my, Marco Pierre-White was probably one of the tougher stages in the sense of, he was in London at the time and he was very current at the time.
He 2-stars, did he?
Yeah, I think it was in the restaurant it was called, and he had it there. And I got in. I got 3 weeks of a stage in there. I can't remember how it happened, but I was just blessed. Myself and the pastry chef just got on like a house on fire. It was amazing. The stuff they were doing was just amazing. But I remember the first day, and I had my uniform from Ireland here, with black trousers, white jacket and a white apron, and it stood out like a sore thumb because they were all in their blues and their greens and stuff like that. So I was down the pastry kitchen. It was downstairs and I was working away trying to get as much as I could from it, and I got a call from the sous chef. What's he call me? Mate or something? Hey, mate. The boss wants to see you. I used to call him the boss.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Oh my God, even thinking about it now.
I'd rattle.
I was rattled. And everyone was looking at me because it was like normal. You know, you're gone. What do you mean I'm gone? That's nice meeting you. I says, geez, I'll go up and meet him anyway, you know, I'll say hello to him. So the boss was Marco. So we went upstairs and he was a giant of a man.
Mm-hmm.
So tall, I couldn't believe it. And he was over in the pastry service area making a souffle. And I goes, hello, I'm here to see you. And what's your name? And I goes, Paul Kelly. And he goes, what are you doing in my kitchen? I says, I'm here for a stage. All right, where are you from? Ireland. And he goes to me, oh, I've been to Ireland a few times, mate. It's nice. And then he said, okay, get lost.
Are you serious?
No, he wasn't kicked out. Just go back to work, like.
That's amazing. So you actually passed.
Must have.
Well,
I was there for two more weeks after that. But I was just blown away by the, like, he was such a big character mm-hmm. then. And so well known. But the food was amazing, like absolutely amazing. And yeah, it was a bit shaky then. I went back downstairs going, geez, what, you survived? Yeah, great. All right.
Maybe that set you up for your TV career. Now we're going to play another piece of music. And I'm a terrible girl, but I was asking about all of the celebrities that have come through the Marion Hotel. And of course, he's tight-lipped and he can't say any names. Mm-hmm. And that's just what they do. But there is one that we all know that was there. And you've chosen this particular man. And tell us maybe your memory of him coming in to the restaurant.
So Lionel Richie we're
yes.
talking about. I just remember this because it was a request for a man who loved M&M's and he wanted M&M's and I said, right, creative mind. So I made a large bag of M&M's, edible completely using my computer printout and sent it up to the room. And such a nice token, and it's all about that for me. It's just someone says thank you. It's the best thing in the world. And
so Lionel Richie said thank you.
Well, he said it in a word in one way, which was he sent me down his signed playlist for the concert in Dublin.
Oh, listen, it doesn't get much better than that.
Got this feeling down deep in my soul that I just can't lose. Guess I'm on my way. Needing a friend, and the way I feel now, I guess I'll be with you.
Sunshine Meets on Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine 106.8.
You're very welcome back. I can't believe it's going so fast. It's Sunshine Meets Andrea Hayes with you on this Sunday night. And we're talking to Paul Kelly, who, of course, is the executive pastry chef at the Marion Hotel. And we're talking all about his wonderful art afternoon tea. But Paul, from the kitchen to the television screens, you became, obviously you were infamous in the culinary world, but then you became famous and people started to not only go to eat your delicious pastries, but people knew you from, of course, the Great Irish Bake Off. But how did that come about? Was that something that just evolved like the rest of your career?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I remember the phone call, but just to go back, maybe it was because I was... Yeah, I've worked in some amazing places and I'll list a few, like the Park Hotel in Kenmare, the Europe Hotel in Killarney, Le Cravan in Baggot Street. You know, maybe it's just people kind of, I suppose, liked what I did. I'm not sure, but the initial phone call was in the kitchen and I actually thought someone was taking the mic when I got the phone call. It was a girl on the other line and she asked my name and I told her my name and she asked me... Well, she told me what they were doing. They were doing a screenshot, I think they call it.
Screen test,
there you go. And would I mind turning up on such and such a date? And I goes, okay, what's the catch here? And I thought the voice sounded familiar, but it wasn't. And then after a few seconds, I said, oh my God, this one is serious. I says, yeah, I'd love to. Sure, where is it going to be? And then, of course, it was Sidelines, was the production company, and we had to meet there. And myself and Biddy White Lennon.
Yeah, talk to us about Biddy White Lennon.
Sure, Biddy's brilliant. I loved her.
And you've got on, you could see you got on so well. And it's interesting because if you think of Paul Hollywood, you were our Irish Paul in a way.
Yeah.
But different, of course, very different in personality and all that sort of stuff. But actually, the two of you were very tough.
Yeah.
And in fact, you became known as the tougher judge.
Yeah.
And you're such a down-to-earth, nice person. But together, you took it so seriously. Talk to us about your working relationship.
Yeah, sure. Listen, like I said, I love Biddy. I mean, our first meeting was in Sidelines and we had a... We had two packets of biscuits, two Kimberly Mikados, and we were asked to, in front of the camera, discuss them. And sure, the two was just like, we both loved them actually, so it was kind of hard. We had to, all right, you're going to be the bad one. You don't, you know, we just got on so well, and we've spent so much time together. I loved listening to her. She was such a lovely person, such a world of knowledge and down to earth, and we just got on and you never knew what you got with Biddy. I mean, there's times you'd be sitting there and next minute she's there and she's gone. You just never knew where she was. But we got on well on screen. Yeah, of course we were the two judges on the TV, but it was just about being honest.
Yeah,
I always said to myself, I'm just going to be true to myself and true to what's in front of me.
And actually, the standards were very high, really.
Yeah.
When you think about, and I was only looking back at it, and Anna as well, I think, was a great presenter.
Sure, Anna's brilliant.
Yeah,
brilliant.
Just the whole lot really worked very well for TV3 at the time, but Virgin Media.
Yeah. But I remember, one of Anna's first lines, because I was like a nervous wreck. You know, you just don't know what to expect, right? It's just the cameras everywhere, and you get some ideas in your head. But remember, I said to Anna, I'm so nervous, and she goes to me, what did she say? Oh yeah, your nerves are a compliment to the audience.
Oh.
And that stuck with me.
Yeah, no, she's worked on TV extensively, as we all know, and we would have known her from Big Brother. She was the first.
Oh, of course, yeah.
I think she was the first Irish person on Big Brother.
Yeah.
And maybe it was the first series of Big Brother even, yeah.
Yeah, but Andrea, just the whole crew. I know I've said this to you before. The best part for me really was just you're surrounded by so many professional people. And what you see is just, you'll never forget it. It's unbelievable.
It's similar to working in the kitchen as well. It's a dance and it's a performance.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're building up to TX transmission, like you're building up to service.
Yeah, and the amount of work that goes into something, the hours, I mean, and I was so lucky as well to be asked to be part of the editing team as well.
Do they bring you in and everything with the edit?
Yeah, we did a couple of voiceovers, which was great.
And did you meet the UK team at all, or did you kind of have a chance to talk about the UK English or the Bake Off?
British Bake Off.
Yeah,
I think I might have mentioned as well, I was a bit very nervous at the beginning, and it took one of the lads from the BBC to come over and just to calm me down, saying, you know, you're here for a reason, and you know, you're going to be fine. And I said, oh my God, I've never done anything like this. But you know, thinking back, but once you go in and you're just yourself, sure, what else is there? Like, I can't be anybody else.
And it was a ratings winner. And actually, if you look at the life of the Great British Bake Off, it moved from one station to another.
Yeah.
So it's quite possible that, you know, that could be revived, you know, in a different format, in a different way. And would that be something
great.
You'd be open to?
Absolutely. I mean, they were like, when people ask me some of my highlights, working on the Great Irish Bake Off was just for sure number one. It's absolutely an amazing experience. But I mentioned about the professional people there, but also the bakers themselves. I mean, you have to have admiration, because, you know, they're going through in a few days what we build ourselves up to be, like, you know, pastry chefs. You know, you don't just start off and work hard and create these wonderful ideas. But they were put in a situation with cameras and the pressure and coming up with some amazing
amazing dishes and recipes,
yeah.
Oh, no, it was incredible to watch. Now, I need to talk to you about your chocolate, because you've very, 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 robust relationship with chocolate. It is a relationship, because it's like something you're working on all the time. It's like a marriage.
It is like a marriage, yeah. And I love chocolate. I love what it can do and what it does for my profession. It's just, you can just use it in every dessert, I would say.
And you've come up with your own chocolate. Like, you've actually designed your own signature chocolate.
Yeah.
For the Marion.
Yeah, we have. And it's a great success. And basically what it is, it's working with Caco Barry. And we developed it through their school in Paris, actually. So it means you basically go over there, you spend a couple of days, you do a lot of tasting. And then what you do then is you try and pick a flavour that suits your customer. So, for example, now at the moment we have a dark chocolate with raspberry scent through it. My own favourite, which is the milk chocolate with caramel. And then what I've done with the white chocolate, I've reduced the amount of sugar in it and added more milk powder.
See, ladies and gents, to reducing the sugar, thinking of us all the time. But now, you mentioned Caco Barry there very quickly, but you're actually an ambassador and one of very few, if you think on a world scale, a global scale. How did that happen?
Yeah, that again was just, I suppose, part and parcel with my career and I suppose the reputation that is out there. But I was invited to be an ambassador with Caco Barry, and it does, it brings you into, like, you have to, I have to say, I'm so humbled, because it's, you're in a group of probably only 100 people or 100 pastry chefs in the world, chocolatiers, craftsmen, amazing. So it's 100 in the world that you're a part of, and there's only two of us in Ireland now. And it's just like last week we're in London, we had a meet up with about 8 of them. And it's just when you're sitting in the room and having a chat and you're hearing what these guys and girls are doing, it's just mind blowing. Like, you're sitting there with the Great British professional Bake Off winner, and you're sitting with a guy who's developed ruby chocolate for in Kit Kat for Japan, and you're sitting there with pastry chefs from all over London. It's amazing, and it's just, you know, and you're one of them.
You're one of the best in the world. That's what they consider you. You know, you're on that top tier. But now I have to ask you: you did have a kitchen disaster. I read about. Is it a crock and bush? Is that you did? But I laughed because every time that I see that on one of the shows, that's always like, you know, this is your final. That's always the one that they get you to make.
I don't know how you found all this out.
I know, but how to tell us about that? Because that was a bit of a kitchen disaster, one of only probably few.
Yeah, I mean, early on you're fired up. You're like, you know, like a wild greyhound just racing to go. You know, so you just accept any project. And this project was, I think it was a birthday party. And I decided, like I always do, I just, you know, I have to pull back sometimes. I just like big, beautiful, extravagant, you know, memorable. It's very important. So a croque en bouche to most people is just a croque en bouche, maybe a foot, 2.5 foot high. But I...
They're small round balls. So in case they don't know what they are.
Right, okay.
And it's kind of, it goes in a cone shape.
Yeah.
Very difficult to make. It's always that, you know, the last piece in the final exam that they do on TV. You know, they show you this masterpiece. And explain what yours was like.
All right. So if you can just imagine the Eiffel Tower, that's the shape we're looking for there. And it's basically shoe buns that have been cooked and cooked a little bit longer so they're dry, filled with pastry cream and then dipped in caramel. And then you build it up like the Eiffel Tower. So I decided to go bigger because it was a birthday party and it was an outside event. But I wanted to do something a little bit more. So I hired a waterfall fountain, which was the base. So the base, the waterfall was nearly a foot and a half high, and the croque en bouche is another 4, maybe 5 foot high. So I got it to the venue and set it up, happy birthday, whatever it was, happy 21st actually, and put it in the middle of the dance floor, thinking to myself, this is a great idea. So the young girl came out and said, oh my God, it's amazing, the ribbons are lovely, and this is brilliant. So I just jumped on my bike and went back to work. And it was a big event, and of course 5 hours later I get a call in the kitchen, get back out here quick, your croque en bouche has collapsed. So I forgot about the dance floor. The dance floor was moving, and of course when they were dancing, the croque en bouche was as well.
Oh my goodness, even experts like Paul Kelly, the pastry expert, can have a kitchen disaster. I mean, I want to kind of ask you about what's next. I mean, I'd love to see a book, personally. I'd love to see you more on TV. I'd love to just see more, because even the videos, I've saw some videos of Inside the Kitchen in the Merrion. The Merrion could be a show in itself, really. There's so much going on.
Yeah.
But if you were to do something creatively like that, what would you like to do next?
Well, I think, you know, I've always wanted to have a book in some format. I think it'd be great. I think there's lots to put in the book. I guess it's just being careful what you put. You could do anything from, you know, afternoon teas. You can do very simple, like how to make very, very simple pastries. I also teach as well. I'm very lucky to be a lecturer in TU Dublin. That's something I want to improve on and improve my own education in that. But again, you know, it's just about... just enjoying what I do.
I'd love the afternoon tea one, because actually I just quite enjoy looking at your photographs and looking at them and then just salivating, imagine eating them, and then you could try, I suppose, to make it at home. You could give the recipe. Would you give the recipes though?
Oh my God, of course, yeah. Because one of the most frustrating things is, I think, is when you buy this beautiful looking book like you've described and none of the recipes worked. And I've always said, if that ever happens to me, if I ever get a book out there, the recipes are going to work. And I'll also be there at the end of the phone if anybody doesn't.
Oh, did you hear that? Now you can ring the Merrion. I'm sure you'd get right through to Paul Kelly in the kitchen. Could you imagine how busy he is? Because your day is it starts very early. We're very lucky to have him now for the show. But it starts in the morning, but it goes right through to the end of service.
It does, yeah. And I mean, that's the way I like it. I love getting up early in the morning. I have to be the first one into the kitchen. It just gets me, I suppose it's a bit selfish, but I like to be ahead of everybody else. And so I can deal with things better. I'm not an afternoon person at all. And then whatever the day holds, whether it's like, I love making my scones. Scones are my favourite in the morning. They set me up.
Infamous
scones. Yeah,
and the cream is quite infamous as
and
well.
The lemon curd.
Yeah, you the have whole to lot. Have all that, yeah. And I noticed a lot of other chefs. I could keep talking, but I know a lot of like very well known Irish chefs love coming into your kitchen and actually asking you to go through step by step how you make your scones and
that
things like that.
That just blows me away.
I know, it's incredible, isn't it?
It's amazing. That, like, I always, and I've never, you know, you think when people want to see what you do and they're interested in what you do, it's such a compliment. Mm-hmm. It's so nice, and it's always nice to have people in there and just, and there's no secrets. I mean, what we do is what we do. We just kind of try and get better and better of it every day, every single day.
So if somebody wants to taste your delicious desserts and your beautiful pastries, the afternoon tea, the art afternoon tea is continuing on in the Merrion.
Oh, it's there. Yeah, it's 7 days a week. And yeah, we also have Garden Room Restaurant.
Fabulous.
Which is all day dining, and it's an absolute fabulous experience. It's on the ground level, so it's natural light coming in through the windows there, and just the food is just stunning, and it's a great choice of food as well. And we have a vegan menu going as well. So.
I know, which is really good for veggies and vegans. And of course, upstairs is your flagship restaurant. You have to give that a mention as well.
The Patrick Gibbo's.
Yes.
Yeah, Patrick Gibbo's is a separate entrance, separate identity, but still a fantastic two Michelin star restaurant.
Two Michelin stars.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing.
To have all of these high standards. Now, the last song, unfortunately, I'd love to keep the executive pastry chef from the Merrion here for much longer and just take all of his recipes and share them with all of our Sunshine listeners. We'll have to go in or give him a call, or unless we have to get the book, we'll have to get him a book out. But we're going to play a bit of George Michael, and I suppose it's just somebody else, another great star who passed away, but it's a song that, or kind of a person that you like to listen to.
Yeah, it's just something that I'd listen to. Like, I'm a fan of I love my motorbike, and I stick my headphones on. It's just one of these songs that just gets you going on the journey, and it's a nice iconic voice. I love it.
Well, Sunshine has just met the executive pastry chef from the Merrion Hotel, Paul Kelly. Enjoy.
Well, I guess it would be nice